in the Deathlands. At least, that was what they all told themselves in their own ways. The truth was that no one wanted to admit there was probably no escape from this life that was all they knew, and perhaps all that there was. Ryan was usually first to come around after a jump. He was the strongest and seemed to weather the jump better than the others. It was always bad at first, like a hangover from jolt or bad shine. But this time it had been marginally better. His head still thumped as if it had been kicked by a muddy mule, but it cleared quickly, and his limbs felt less sluggish as he rose to his feet and checked himself. Christy was also soon conscious. Her hair flowed freely, suggesting that they were, for the time being, safe.
Gaia, Ryan, that was the best jump ever. I hardly feel a thing.
Yeah, me neither, lover.
JB and Mildred were also rapidly up to speed, the armorer checking his weapons and adjusting his spectacles so that he could make sense of his surroundings while Mildred went to check Doc. It was unspoken, but all worried that one day there would be one jump too many for Doc Tanner. His fragile psyche had received far too many shocks of this kind before they'd even first encountered him, and the physical effects of having been trawled through time were all too obvious. But even Doc had taken this jump well. He was still unconscious when Mildred went over to him, but he wasn't muttering to himself in delirium, as sometimes happened after a bad jump. He showed no signs of distress, and he soon came around. Dean was quickly on his feet. Like a younger version of his father, it was only the youthful lack of stamina that prevented him from being one of the first to recover.
Hot pipe, I feel good!
That left only Jack. The whip-thin, small albino had incredible strength and stamina for his frame and size, but the Matrans took no account of that, and seemed to drain him of strength. It always made him vomit and bleed and feel as though he'd been ripped out from the insides, and then roughly put back together again. Whereas the others had recovered more rapidly than usual, Jack seemed to take longer, which was why Mildred leaned over him and voiced her concern.
Yeah, okay. Bad jump.
Are you sure? We all recovered fairly quickly. Do you want me to give you a quick examination just to check?
Maybe. Maybe that bad thing.
While Mildred checked the teen, finding that his pulse and respiration had recovered as usual, and that there were no other physical signs as to why he should have taken the jump differently than the rest of them, Ryan and JB prepared to secure the redoubt. Ryan glanced over to Christy, who shook her head almost imperceptibly. Cotter and the armorer had already discussed their instinctive sense that the redoubt was empty. Caution was still necessary, but both men had been fighters and survivors too long not to have a sixth sense about danger in a new situation. And the one-eyed warrior always relied on Christy's muddy sense of nearby danger. He noticed her hair flow freely as she moved her head. That was a good sign.
Let's do it.
JB nodded silent agreement and waited as Ryan opened the armaglass door. Keeping close to the floor and moving swiftly, the two men moved out into the anteroom, eyes scanning the area for the best cover. They moved on into the control room beyond. The air conditioning hummed as it had for 100 years. The computer terminals in the room were on freestanding bases. A few notes were scribbled on the 2001 wall planners, but the different colored inks had faded over the years. Ryan and JB secured the room, then continued to wreck the corridors and rooms immediately adjacent. All were silent. When the two men returned to the control room, Jack had fully recovered and was waiting with the others outside the Matran's chamber.
This may be a first. It's empty, and there's no sign of any real damage.
That means I should be able to get some medical supplies to take along. It's about time we had some luck in that area.
Also means the armory should be intact. Maybe I'll even be spoiled for choice.
Well, my dear Ryan, perchance we can tarry a few days in exploration.
Ryan turned to where Doc was standing. The old man had moved away from the group, drawn toward the maps and charts that were pinned to one wall. As Ryan watched, Doc turned back to the map he had been studying, and tapped a point toward the northwest of the old United States with the end of his sword stick.
According to this map, we are not far from the ruins of Old Seattle, near Raw and the mysteries of the Illuminated Ones. We are headed in the right direction for the mysterious Horn of Plenty.
Horny what? Come on, Doc, speak some kind of language I can understand.
My dear young Corder, a horn of plenty is that which is full to overflowing with that which you most desire, a blessed cornucopia. In this case, our departed friend Trader's mythical land of stockpiles. Something keeps drawing us back to this area.
Yeah, the Matrans.
Jack said nothing, but suppressed a shiver at the mention of Rawville and the Illuminated Ones. Coincidences like that didn't fit with his view of the world, and he didn't want to think about his dream.
There may be truth in your jest, John Barrymore. It could possibly be that there are automatic settings on the Matrans units that tend to direct traffic here if the units are fully functional.
You mean like an electronic beacon or computerized homing pigeon?
Exactly. And so aptly put, Dr. Wyeth. It would make sense, would it not, for any computerized devices to have an emergency setting? At least from what I have gleaned from the technology. And what could be more of an emergency than the Matrans being used after Skydark, albeit several decades too late?
Jack felt twitchy. He'd felt that way since Doc had pointed out their location.
We sleep, then move?
Why move on so quickly?
Not been in redoubt yet without trouble.
Ryan fixed Jack with his steely blue eye.
But outside also means trouble, Jack. This is a good place to rest up for a few days. Maybe replenish our supplies. No, we're not going yet.
Jack shrugged, lapsing into an uneasy silence. The albino's unease had created a tense atmosphere that could only be dispersed by their leaving the control room. Ryan sent the albino along with Dean and Doc to check out the dorms and kitchens to look for fresh clothes and food. Mildred and Christy went to the dispensary to see what medical supplies they could find that were still of some use. Meanwhile, the one-eyed warrior joined JB in checking out the armory. As they'd suspected, the redoubt was in full working order and almost untouched by the devastation that had occurred 100 years before. There were plenty of self-heats in the kitchen, a set of fully working showers, clean uniforms, bedding, and plenty of medical supplies that were usable. Some of the drugs left in the dispensary could even pass muster as painkillers and antibiotics, although what use they could be against some of the post-Skydark mutated bacteria was debatable. The armory was also fully stocked, with the hardware, grens, and ammo still freshly greased and boxed. JB and Ryan loaded up with ammo.
Seems a shame to leave all this here.
You know what Trader used to say, JB? You can have the best blasters in the whole of Deathlands, but if there's so many that you can't untangle them in a firefight...
Then you might as well have none at all. Guess he was right. Still seems a damn shame, though.
I'm with you on that. But at least we know where this place is, and it doesn't seem that anyone else does. And if we ever jump back here, we'll have our own little stockpile.
I'll have to be satisfied with that. Let's get out of here and eat before this breaks my heart.
They all passed a comfortable night, and the next morning, Dean and Mildred devoted themselves to trying to find some useful information on the comps, while Ryan and JB decided to check out the exits from the redoubt. The one concern Ryan had was that the redoubt would be completely cut off from the outside world. If a landfall or earth shift of some kind had led to the upper levels being damaged, and the elevator shafts and emergency stairwells were blocked, they would have no choice but to jump. If, however, they were clear, and the fact that the redoubt had been left alone for so long suggested that they were in a sparsely populated area, venturing above ground would be that much easier. The elevators were working, and the men discovered that the upper levels were as well preserved as those that housed the Matrans chamber, the dormitories, kitchens, and the armory. They inspected the array of offices and workrooms.
We could learn a lot about the redoubts from all this.
Would it matter?
Maybe, maybe not. Guess it's mostly my own curiosity.
Well, remember that Jack doesn't share it.
Yeah, me and Christy were talking about that. She figures that something happened during the jump. Maybe some kind of doomy feeling that he doesn't want to talk about.
Jack ain't doomy.
Neither is Christy. Maybe it can hit you just once.
In which case, I'd listen to it.
Following their wreck, the two men returned to the Matrans control room, where Christy and Dean were in conference over one of the comp consoles, with Doc looking on.
Well?
It's all in working order, Christy, and the upper levels look as untouched as down here. My guess is that we're in an area that hasn't got any vills nearby, and is off any trade routes.
Will that not make leaving here on foot a little risky, to say the least?
Everything's a risk, Doc. We take enough supplies for a few days, and if it looks impassable or too desolate, then we come back here and jump.
If we have to do that, I wouldn't give you much for the chances of picking a destination. Looking at this is just telling me how little I actually learned at school. There's so little old comp tech that I've seen. Just too much to pick up quickly.
He's right, Ryan. This is too complex compared to what even I learned back in the day.
Okay, we leave tomorrow on foot.
That will please young Jack. He has been a trifle restless since we arrived.
As if we hadn't noticed. I'll be glad to...